Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Marry me and bear my children, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy, the news radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter producer for Decider.com. This week, I am joined by comedian extraordinaire, Angela Demanti. Hello, Angela!
Holy God! We're right into the quotes.
Yeah, and I should also mention Cheers superfan, Angela Demanti.
Yeah, Cheers superfan, asterisk, follow the asterisk down to the bottom of the page, horn dog for Ted Danson.
Yeah. Oh, because I think, so if you want like a prequel to this episode, you can go back and listen to Aaron Gold's Don't Mind If I Don't podcast, where Angela and I were the guests on his Cheers episode.
Because he did convincing.
The conceit of his podcast is that he pinpoints things in pop culture that he is not well-versed in or maybe doesn't like or is averse to, and then brings in experts in that thing to try to convince him whether or not to like it.
And we are the experts.
Yeah. Yeah, that is basically true. This week we are going to be traveling to October 25th, 1984. Teachers ruled the box office. I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder topped the charts, and NBC aired the Cheers episode Fairy Tales Can Come True. Angela.
Also, the anniversary of the Battle of Agincourt.
What? October 25th?
Yes, it's St. Crispin's Day. Oh. For all those Henry V Shakespeare nerds, shout out. So
Shakespeare, Stevie Wonder, and Fairy Tales Can't Come True. You must have seen Fairy Tales Can't Come True many times before today.
It's true. Like, I think I watched it three times in the last 2 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've watched it twice in the last couple days.
Okay.
My history with Cheers, which if anyone wants to hear more about Cheers, you can go back and listen to the Thanksgiving episode I did last year with Taylor Moore, where we got very drunk in the Kickstarter offices, and our conversation diverged into, like, Ronald Reagan and the AIDS epidemic of the 80s. It was great. But on that tip, keeping the tradition alive, I am drinking Angry Orchard Hard Cider Green Apple tonight.
And I am drinking a rosé from a company called Wine Cube. It's a box. It is 3 liters of rosé. Oh, wow. I'm not going to drink all of that tonight.
So I watched Cheers. You can go back and listen to that episode and hear my Cheers origin story about how I was not prescribed painkillers after major surgery and healed myself with the power of Cheers watching 3 seasons in 3 days on Netflix. Yeah. So when I got to this is season 3.
Yes.
So when early season 3. So I got to this one like after mainlining like the first 2 seasons in like 2 days, and I got to this and I remember I remember the first time I watched it very clearly. I think there are tweets. I think I go through my tweet archives and find about just how emotionally overinvested, like, tearful it was. Well, so this episode, like, specifically.
In rewatching a lot of it, like, I was noticing, like, it does the things that Cheers does best, and it's about that found family, And the way everyone watches out for Cliff.
Yeah.
It's just
so sweet.
Yeah.
What is your Cheers history?
My Genesis?
Yeah,
Cheers Genesis. So that's interesting. So I remember I watched entirely too much TV growing up. Basically, my parents, my dad would pick us up from school. We'd get home around 3:30, and then I would watch TV until bed.
Yeah.
Were the days, like 6-7 hours of TV. But in between, you have 3 to 5 was Disney afternoons.
Yes.
But then 5 to 8 were all the reruns in syndication.
Yep.
And I remember it was oh, Cheers is just on, but I was too young. I'd watch it, but I didn't realize, the majesty of it.
Yeah, it's a really, I remember seeing it as a kid and being like, this is not for me. It is one of the most aggressively
brown shows.
Yeah, very 21 and up. I mean, even 30 and up, honestly.
Yeah,
that opening credit is all portraits from the 19th century. It's even older than old.
Yeah, I know it started, in what, 82?
Yeah, 82.
September 82. If you just saw that theme song, you'd be like, when is, this is from 100 years ago.
Yeah, this is the Depression era. I didn't know they had television in the Depression.
Yeah, and so it didn't strike me. And I didn't understand the ladies' man aspect at all. Until I became a woman. And then when it was on Netflix and it was a buzz about 30-year anniversary, I was like, okay, I'm on board. And I decided to binge it. And because also it had just been dropped on Netflix. And, there were all those articles about how it's the greatest pilot ever.
Yep.
And it was New Year's Day with Maddie, Mako, and I, and we just started binging it together. And we got to the 4th episode, Coach's Daughter.
So early.
Yeah, and then, it was New Year's Day, so we were hungover, watching Cheers, and then we started fanning our faces from the heat in our cheeks as we felt our salty tears run down our face, and we're like, what? What is this doing? And
then what is happening to us?
Coach! Oh my God!
You've never seen a show pull out an ace that early.
It just astounded me. Then I was babysitting a newborn, which means it was just a little thing that slept all day. So I would get paid to sit in a room with a sleeping baby and watch hours of Cheers.
So I also, for work, I have watched Cheers for work. So we have both been paid to watch Cheers. So this is also a Halloween episode and also a Halloween episode of the podcast. I'm a Halloween maniac.
What do you mean maniac? What's your definition?
I go October 1st. I change over on my social media to spooky shit. Paul Lind Halloween themed. I always have a costume. Sometimes I will have multiple costumes in a year, depending on how many things I am going to.
Have you ever been Ponce de Leon?
No. But I have been Space Klavan.
Okay.
Which was... Which was a hybrid mashup of Montgomery Scott, Scotty from Star Trek.
Okay.
And Cliff Klavan.
Oh, that's...
So I got a red engineer shirt. I got Scotty's shirt. And then I got a mailman's jacket, but the one I bought off eBay was a shinier nylon, a thick, shiny, I meant a rainproof.
Okay.
80s postman's jacket. So it was a shiny post jacket that I then glued his patches to. And then I had the Star Trek engineer insignia pinned to that. And then I had a mustache and just drank beer.
So.
And then I also had the black pants that were too short with white socks.
Oh, you have to. So what accent would you speak in?
Oh, see, I think I just did straight up Cliff, because I think like trying to mangle a Scottish, Scottish,
I want to hear the
Scottish Cliffy
Boston accent and Scottish accent.
Jeez, I can barely do a Cliff. I don't know.
I
get the power. Somehow, Denny got the power. Anyway, so I love Halloween. I also watch nothing but Halloween episodes of sitcoms, and I chart them all on Twitter.
I saw your flowchart.
And then last year I did this insane Halloween flowchart where you can find it if you Google Halloween sitcom flowchart.
You mean there are not going to be a dozen?
No,
like, that
I'm the only crazy person that watched like 50 Halloween episodes and tracked which ones had parties or pranks or costumes.
Halloween episodes are kind of always the best of a season.
They are great. There are some that only do like the cold open is Halloween and then the rest of the episode.
That's not a Halloween episode. No.
It's like, fuck that. So what do you, are you, how pro or anti Halloween are you?
I love Halloween. I think October is my favorite month. But then also,
it is a really good month.
It's a good, like, it's a great month. And also, you know, I like to bleed my October into the first 2 days of November because that's Día de los Muertos. And I grew up in California with a large Hispanic population. And, you know, Mexican culture bleeds through our state in a wonderful, wonderful way.
Yeah.
So I grew up, you don't just celebrate Halloween. Then you build an altar to dead people. And like, there were like family priest friends who had like those the skeletons were creepy when I was younger. Now I love them and they're joyful.
Yeah.
And a celebration of all existence. But he had these figurines that freaked me out. But now, like, I love it. And Coco, I got to rewatch Coco. But I love the change of seasons. And, like, I love those. I love, like, the first couple weeks when people don't know how to dress.
Yeah, I'm going through that now.
Yeah, and they're like, I know, do I wear a sweater? Do I wear a scarf? And Halloween just comes at, like, the way the seasons change and when Halloween comes, it's like, this is not a summer holiday. This is not like, it is the perfect, like,
yeah.
Like I could understand. And it's just perfect. Halloween's perfect.
Yeah. No one else is perfect. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Cheers episode Fairy Tales Can Come True. It is the fourth episode of season 3 and was written by Sam Simon and directed by James Burrows. Here is how Netflix describes the episode. Cliff meets the woman of his dreams at the bar on Halloween night, but is afraid of meeting her when he's not in costume. Angel, how accurate is that description?
It's very accurate. And isn't it a metaphor for our lives?
Yeah.
And how we all kind of wear masks.
We're in like a social media costume.
Yeah, we all have our social media masks. And we're afraid. We are afraid.
Cliff and Sharon O'Hare were just sliding into each other's DMs in the 2018 version of Cheers.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then they have to meet in real life without the mask of DMs.
Yeah. So I think in terms of like Halloween episodes, this one is a good one because it could not take place at any other time. The masks and the Halloween party are inextricable from the episode.
Like it's essential. Because there are other Halloween episodes where you could lift it and kind of put it anywhere. But you cannot.
Like there is the there's the bar prank wars one in like season 10, which like they do bar pranks often, so like that could happen another time maybe.
Because it did happen other times. Yeah.
And then there's the one where Carla gets the haunted house and Cliff goes and like spends the night at her place, which aired at the end of October, but it's not set at Halloween.
But it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so it is like if they just added that twist of like it's also Halloween night, then great Halloween episode. But they leave out that detail. So this one takes place at Halloween, has a plot that can only happen on Halloween, and it opens up Not even with the Cheers is filmed in front of a live studio audience. It is Frasier reciting The Raven.
And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Oh, boy, Doc. You tell great stories.
That was Poe.
Don't be modest. It was great.
That was a little jarring where it's like, oh, we're just diving in.
Yeah.
It felt unnatural. But then when you see Frasier in that costume. While
let's talk about all the costumes.
Yes. Okay, let's do a breakdown.
So we first see Frasier, and he's dressed as the Mad Hatter. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good Mad Hatter costume.
Yes. And I think that, like, if you had to pick Alice in Wonderland as a theme, like, yes, that is exact. Like, I could see him as a White Rabbit, too. But the just the ridiculousness of that hat and that giant bow tie.
Yeah.
And him being 110% committed to reciting that poem as Frasier, like, no winks, not a smirk.
Yeah.
That juxtaposition is so good.
And then Diana's dressed as Alice, of course, because they are still... Frasier joins in the season 3 premiere, correct?
Yeah, like, this is his fourth episode.
Yeah, so that's really crazy that... I mean, I've seen this episode so many times recently, and I keep forgetting that, this is early Frasier. I had to write my notes. This is early Frasier. Like, this is... At least for them,
that character is still in flux and being shaped and defined, and him wearing that outfit and reciting Edgar Allan Poe is like you look back and you're like, of course.
Yeah, it seems like Frasier's been on the. If you're just watching this episode, jumping in cold, it feels like Frasier's been on the show forever because his character is so fully formed.
Like, that's
just from that one moment.
Incredible to me. That it's like, fourth episode of the show itself had that ace card.
It's like, here's Coach's daughter, Jesus.
And this fourth episode of Frasier, this is his coach's daughter.
this is Frasier's coach's daughter.
Everybody. Yeah.
So Coach is dressed as a pirate.
With a
stuffed bird on his shoulder.
That's just it's horizontal. Yeah.
And it's like a nice, like, yellowy orange silky shirt, and it's really nice.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I associate pirates with being kind of flamboyant with their silky shirts and bright colors, and then he has like the line about like defending stereotypes about whether or not a person's gay based on how they look, and like.
Yeah.
Oh,
interesting.
Way to go.
Sam is dressed as a cowboy because obviously he is.
Oh, God. I like
the thirst is real.
I can't. Oh God. Like it's beautiful. It's a beautiful costume. He's behind the bar when you first see it and he has that bandana around his neck just to see.
Yeah.
But I think the show's like stopper of his cowboy costume was when he comes from around the bar and you see those are chaps he's wearing, right? Is that what you would call
them? Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And like they're wide legged, but it's like they make his legs.
Well, you're a big proponent of...
Yeah, should we give a background?
Mr. Ted. So the thing is like, this episode's going to highlight both of the men in Cheers that we have crushes
on. like this is absolutely a showcase for your crush. And that costume. Like, the chaps, they frame it so, like, the only part of blue jeans you see is around his dick. But if he turns, it's just around his ass. It's like...
Yeah, chaps are...
Like, it's just, like, framed. Like, it's asking for... like, you're asking. Cheers.
I mean, he knows what he's
Burrows,
doing.
He's asking us to ogle. Like, there's no other way.
Sam is the man candy.
So, yeah, it's
Carla. Yeah, Carla is dressed
pregnant prison.
Yeah, she's wearing a, she's wearing like the black and white stripes. Yes. Norm is just Norm.
Yeah,
because of course he is.
Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I should dress as Norm. I don't understand why I haven't yet. Norm is Norm.
And then Cliff is Ponce de Leon, but we'll get to him when we get to him.
He doesn't appear until 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Which, then you know the episode is going to be about him.
Yeah, Cheers usually does that. Like, they usually start with the B plot, and then the A plot doesn't start until a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's usually this.
Like, hey, Cheers, I've decoded you.
Yeah.
But in a way, we're like, you're like, oh, someone's missing. That means it's going to be bigger. But they lay out, like, the foundation, like, the background, and, like, kind of the ambience of where everyone else is. And it's the fertilizer for the main.
Yeah. Before Cliff walks in, you get the scene between Frasier and Sam where, like, they're talking about, like, the Boston Pop. Like, they're setting up the B plot of Frasier's going to be going away on business, and Sam's going to take Diane to this concert.
Like, you know that's happening. And it's actually, like, a lot of exposition, but in, like, a fun, brilliant way. And then, like, you know, like, there's that scene where, where Sam's talking about how much he loves the Boston Pops. Then he goes away, and Frasier and Diane have that aside, like...
You know, sometimes I think that Sam is actually pretending to be less intelligent than he really is.
But how intelligent would someone have to be to successfully pretend to be that dumb?
Boy, I'm not even sure that I could pull it off.
Oh, yes, you could.
It's a four-line scene.
Yeah.
But it feels richer because they laid out everything, and then with all the B and C plots, you can just, like, tap into it and have a four-line scene that feels much bigger.
And it's also, like, it feels longer, too, because the flow, the pace of Cheers is so monoscene-y, to use an improv term.
Yeah, yeah. Or, like, it's almost... Yeah, it is, like, they're all blocked.
Because it doesn't feel like... If they had, like, cut to that four-line scene and then cut away, it would have felt more, like, short. But since it, like, since everything flows in... Because also around this time is when there's that really good line of, like, when Diane is...
I'm sorry, Carla, if we offended you with our public display of affection. But try to understand. Frasier Crane has the same effect on me that cheap Chianti and dice hanging from a rearview mirror have on you. Boy, you got a bat.
Like, Carla is not featured in this episode. She has maybe, four times where she has a commentary, and she's full Carla, and you're like, oh, and there's that satisfaction of, like, yes, this is exactly how that character would react in this situation. And then she disappears for the other 24 minutes of the episode. But, like, she can just flow. Like, it's really... Like, in theater, they call it French scenes. And French scenes are the same location, but, like, it's focused on two different characters. I'm probably totally botching that for experts of French scenes listening to this. But, like, whenever there are, a focus on two different people, that's a scene in French theater. So, Cheers.
So, yeah, Cheers is stacked with that shit.
Yeah. Well, because they have to, and they find that... Like, it's musical almost, where, like, there are, like in a symphony, like, you hear motifs of characters, and then they come back and they flow, and but, like, it doesn't have to be saturated in one character or one sound or one theme.
It also creates creates a place where you want to go, because it does feel, like, the flow of Cheers feels warm. Like, when I think of, like, an Arrested Development or an Office, like, the way those shows are edited, it's a personal thing, and I still think that both those shows are great, but they're edited, like, so sharply and precisely, I don't know, it feels pricklier in a way, which is kind of also the humor of an Arrested Development.
Yeah.
It's very much, like, sharp bursts, whereas Cheers, like, a Cheers, or, you know, some early Friends, they have this flow to them that make you like kind of just want to sit in the room and listen to these people talk.
I think it's also related to the way the premise of the show is constructed. And yeah. I think there is like a through line between the shows you mentioned, but also between Taxi, yes. Cheers, yeah, yeah. And then fast forwarding a couple decades, Community and The Good Place.
Yeah.
Because all what all those shows have in common are people who kind of reached an end of a rope in their lives.
Yeah.
And that are kind of stranded in what would assume to be a depressing place. all those shows.
Yeah.
And then it's really focused on like these people kind of feel like failures and outcasts.
What do we owe to each other?
What do we
to quote like, The Good Place?
Yeah. And it's about like, and how do we get better with the people we interact with? All those shows are at their core about that.
Yeah.
And there has to be a warmth in that or else it's nihilism.
Right. And Cheers is so not that.
But the thing is, like, if you just said the premise of Cheers or Taxi or Community or
you'd be like,
or
oh my God.
Place, it'd be like,
yeah.
Oh, that's
that sounds awful.
Bleak. And, yeah, and it's about that community and that family and like knowing when you go there, everyone's going to know your name.
Yeah, that's all I want. So then we get Cliff's entrance, which I have written down in my notes. And nice legs.
You never see that much legs of Cliff.
Cliff is dressed as Ponce de Leon because this is Cliff's Florida season.
I mean, I feel like it goes beyond.
It's like a series. He never stops. It's a really great runner.
Like, it's kind of amazing that they did, like, I don't know. You probably know the sitcom landscape better than I do of that time. But is there like that an ongoing bit like that in anything?
I mean, you have like runners of like Mary Tyler Moore. Mary Richards always had horrible parties. And then by the end of the series, they would actually comment on that, which is kind of meta. But there's something like Cliff going to Florida in between
like,
one and two.
You never see it.
And then he just doesn't stop talking about Florida forever. I mean, I even think that the retirement episode of Frasier, is he retiring to go to Florida? Like, so Cliff is dressed as Ponce de Leon, and that starts a whole, like, runner about him and Coach have an exchange about his ears. Which they do, like, when Cliff takes off his little, like, conquistador helmet, his ears are really protruding out. It gets very noticeable.
In a way you never notice, right?
Yeah, yeah. In a way you never notice. It might be because, like, the domino mask he's wearing is, like... Did Ponce de Leon even wear a mask? That might just be a...
I think it was just...
Of the
Cliff
episode.
Was insecure.
Yeah. And then Cliff...
Oh, I don't know, Coach. I happen to be very proud of my big ears. I mean, a lot of women consider them erogenous zones during heavy petting.
I love your Cliff impression.
Go for
also,
it.
I love being able, because on our last podcast, I horned out so much to Ted Danson, and you just wanted to talk about John Ratzenberger, and this is such a showcase for him.
Oh, I know. This, like, at this point, so, like, first time watching it, first time through, I already, like, obviously, I had an affinity for Cliff, the character, from, like, I think he's adorable, physically, because I have a type.
At what point in the series did you realize, like, oh, I've got a bad for Cliff?
Oh, I think that's probably right away.
Okay. So Cliff is your Sam.
Like, but also, like, in terms of the character I would most want to play on Cheers, like, Cliff, hands down.
Okay,
like,
yes.
Speaking of, like, a comedic performer, I'm like, God, that's such a fun role for me. Like, I would love that.
Also, I feel like if Cliff were in the world of improv and that character... He would be the walk-on. He'd come and be like, oh, do you know about this fact?
Yeah.
And then, like, just remove himself. Like,
that's what I love.
Or it's like, I'm just going to add a little spice and get out.
And so by the time you get to this episode, like, I was so deep in it. And then, like, To hear this episode from 1985 talking about whether or not Cliff was gay, like, sent up so many, like,
yeah,
ding, 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 ding.
Because
like,
you have a far different perspective on that. I want to know.
Well, like, I was, you know, I knew that he wasn't going to be gay.
That
would have
been incredible, though.
That would have been, like, what? That would have been history-making
that,
to have a
yeah,
Swiss
regular.
Yeah, that would
have been, like, what? Like, New York Times article.
Yeah.
Major, like, a sitcom in 1985.
Yeah. So, but, like, even the conversation around it, I still, like, even now, I'm like, I love that so much. Just, like, the sad sack Cliff can't get a date is a thing that I also enjoy for some reason. Like, I just find it really, like, he's so pathetic. But also I do think, like, hey, you can make a case for gay Cliff Clavin, which if I ever do write my fanficky modern day revival of Cheers, you know, 25 years after the finale, I would totally have Cliff with a man.
Yeah, like,
boom.
I could absolutely, like, if Cheers was just launched today, I feel like, maybe you'd make him older, like, because everyone's supposed to be in, like, their early 30s when Cheers starts, which is also mind-blowing.
It's so weird
to
think of it. Like, yeah, like, they were all in their early to mid-30s, and it's like, what?
Like, that's what that looked like back then.
Because they all look like, in my head, none of them age over the 11 years of Cheers.
Yeah,
they're all just 40 when it starts,
and
then, like,
no,
maybe 42
40.
When it ends.
Even Sam, like, part of me is like, wait, what do you mean, Ted, that you started this show when you were younger? Like, yeah. It baffles me. But, like, if no Cheers had existed and it was born today, I feel like you would make Cliff a little bit older than 30. Like, maybe he would be a 40-year-old male, man.
Yeah. Which he does admit in this one, he is middle-aged.
Okay. Oh my god, middle age has also changed. But then, yeah, like, also, like, maybe him, like, being raised in an environment where he was clueless and not primed to,
yeah,
examine that part of himself and then realize.
Which is what,
like,
Cliff is.
Yeah, and then
which
you
is also,
he
like,
realized,
even what,
oh, like, I have this horrible, fucked up relationship with my mother that affected everything and all of my expectations in life. And then, like, it'd be this incredible story of someone in 2018 being middle-aged and realizing their sexuality.
Yeah. See, that's what... So I need to write this Cheers revival.
Well, the way that dude wrote that Seinfeld 9/11 script, like...
Yeah, that's...
Just do that. Like, and people like, oh my god, Cliff.
Cliff, or Cheers 2018, it's a coffee shop now. No,
it would be.
It would have been a coffee shop for 15 years, and then now it would be a revival speakeasy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Speakeasy. But then, like, as marijuana legalization comes in, like, that would also play a role.
More.
Which would change the total tone of everything. People be
so we get along back and forth. Like Cliff goes away. And they all, like, all the guys in the bar really start ragging on what, like, they actually...
They bring in those, like, extras, or, like, they have those characters.
One of those guys has name. One of those guys is in every episode. I can't remember what his name is.
But it's the actor's first name.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other guy is just like, this is his only episode. He got more lines, which I'm feeling. If I'm the other guy, I'm like, why ain't I getting that line? I'm here every week.
Actually, I counted... how many lines each of them got. Because I was very curious, like, are they going to give them more than an under five? And I realized they probably split the lines between two characters so they didn't have to pay.
Oh, that's good. Oh.
So each of them has three lines.
Wow, that's really sneaky.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, they did this specifically. So they did not have to pay those guys.
But they actually do come out and say, like, hey, is Cliffy gay or what? And I remember, like, watching it the first time being like, it's still shocking to hear an 80s TV show just flat out, like, not say funny, not say, like
you know. And make, like, a motion with their wrist or whatever.
And then Coach has this thing, like, which, you know, inter-series continuity, the boys in the bar from season one.
Yes.
Where they went through this whole gay panic thing, and Coach... acts like he actually learned the lesson of that episode where he's like,
hey, no, he's your best friend. Is he gay or what?
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
You can't tell a gay guy by his appearance. We had an outfielder on the Red Sox, Duke Roberts. I mean, he never got married, he never went with girls, he even wore those fancy Italian shoes. And he lived with the guy who was a florist. And Duke wasn't gay.
Yes, he was, Coach.
He was? You think he'd like to meet Cliffy?
Oh, come on.
It's so... Like, part of it's like, uh-oh, are we going backwards? And you know, like, this is delightful. Also,
yeah.
Go back and watch Ted Danson open his seltzer bottle, take a sip. Like, he's listening to everything.
Yeah.
And there's no wink. There's no, like, sly thing. But he genuinely, like, it's an aside, like, he was gay.
Yeah.
Where, like, he's not trying to be smart about it. He's just like, actually. And then, like, just like, and also not to embarrass his former teammate and not to embarrass Coach. Like, there's this warmth of, like,
yeah,
I just want you to know.
Yeah, this speaks to what I also noticed watching this episode again, because I'm also currently watching a whole lot of multicam sitcoms that are on right now,
okay.
Because we're actually in this weird kind of great renaissance of multicam sitcoms, because The Conners is back. The Conners is actually really good, which is a surprise.
Also, are they going to do a Halloween episode in the
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Yep, okay. Next week.
Okay.
Also, like, Murphy Brown is back, but then also there's new ones, The Cool Kids, Happy Together, and The Neighborhood, and they're all really fun and really good, but there is this difference to the performing style, which, so there's what people think multicam sitcoms are like,
and
which is...
We recreate that picture in our heads, but it's...
Yeah, like it's, the,
yeah, go ahead.
It's like, you know, the big... It's why people, like, make fun of Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men, like, the like, Nickelodeon and Disney multicam kids sitcoms where everyone's cheating out to the audience, and it's all really loud, and we're making sure that we're getting the joke across.
I'm gonna be louder so you get the joke. Yeah.
So if you were doing this exchange on one of those shows, it would be like, actually, you know, Coach, he was gay. Oh, well, do you think he'd want to go out with Cliffy? Like,
yeah, it would be like, whoa. Well, like, this was just, it felt real.
Yeah. All of the, it's what drives me a little bit crazy when people are so dismissive of multicam sitcoms, because it's like, there's no reason why all of the acting styles have to be that exaggerated, because you go back and watch this, and there are moments of exaggeration in the, I mean, John Ratzenberger clicks his heels at one point.
Oh, he does a bellhop. He does a bellhop in excitement. This is at about...
And he gets a date.
If you want a timestamp, at 13 minutes and 28 seconds in...
Oh, I gotta make that GIF, actually.
like, he's trying to play it cool. Sam is like being like, that was great. And 1328 is when he says, like, I'll give you 1, 2, 3. And he goes crazy. And he, yeah. I'm like, I don't remember ever seeing a bellhop where someone clicks their heels on television.
Yeah,
and there was just something so pure.
So jubilant.
Yeah, it was pure. Like,
yeah. And it also feels like that moment of big heightened feels earned, because everything else is just like so gradual. There is, or this, it's so easy.
And Cliff's like trajectory, like he doesn't get that way. And to see like him of all the characters, like I could understand like joy from every character, just to see him. Like, see himself as an attractive human being.
Ugh. Like, yeah.
And the thing is, every one of us, maybe not Sam alone, is caught in, like, our own heads. We get sick of ourselves. We don't see how other people see us. And
Cliff is always being, I mean, he still lives with his mother. He, you know... Carla's always picking on him, like...
I mean...
The guys are always ragging him.
The number of times his close friends refer to him as a boob...
Yeah.
...is just like, oh, Cliff.
Well, there's the thing I also love about Cliff, and this is the thing I always get to, is that, first of all, Cliff chose a Halloween costume where he wore tights.
Yeah.
Which I love. And then also, Cliff wears Speedos, which comes up multiple times over the course of the series. And it's always a thing that everyone's always like, everyone always ribs him about it. Like in the season 9 or 10 Halloween episode, they actually say like one of the pranks they did at Gary's Old Town Tavern last year was sending him down there nothing but his Speedos. And they were like, yeah, they didn't handle that. And he says something like, well, yeah, I was making a scary face. And it's like, oh, see, there's a slice of Cliff that's like, he actually is super comfortable in his body, which is so, it's such an interesting choice. And I think it is in this episode with him choosing to wear a Ponce de Leon costume, which is very, like, showy.
For him, especially.
Yeah. But it's such a cool thing.
His, like, internal mind. And
yeah, like, he feels good, but he still gets, like, swatted down a lot by society.
But, like, I feel like there's something, like, he keeps talking about Florida. It doesn't matter that everyone else hates it. And, like, isn't that, like, an equivalent to being like, yeah, I'm going to wear these fucking Speedos and rock them. I'm not doing this for anyone but myself.
Yeah, I like learning all these useless... He's very much, like, he's a very weirdly confident guy, except in this like area where he falls apart.
There's just something where he's not afraid to be who he is.
Yeah, to let the freak flag fly.
Yeah. And when he dresses in a suit.
Oh yeah.
And then you see him sit down and you see, oh, that suit, that hemline is also too short for you.
Yeah.
And you're also still wearing white socks.
Yeah. Yep. But it's like everything else. Oh, I think Cliff, you're so close. So he sits down at the bar and he sits down next to a woman dressed as Tinkerbell and he's like talking about Florida. And then there's like a beat. And then she says to him,
Florida oranges are delicious.
Which is like the most Cliff specific pickup line
ever.
Like someone else wants to talk about Florida.
Magic sack. Where I could just pick, oh, what is the most perfect line to hit on this guy? And,
yeah.
Like, that's, like, of course, like, also, there's such boldness, because they're sitting with their backs to the studio audience.
Yeah, they're sitting on that side of the bar.
But, like, and it's, like, weird and uncomfortable, and the way that they have to film it, they have to film their backs, because they can't film their fronts, because there's no set.
Yeah.
But then there's this trust because you know Cliff is going to do like a full body turn.
Yeah, which he does.
Which he does. And
well, and also it makes her so much more mysterious too, which her introduction into this, I mean, she's wearing a mask and you only see her back and she says that one mysterious line. You're in Cliff's head a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing her the way he sees her, of like, she's this mystery figure.
And like, you don't really know, but if you're going to entice Cliff, I mean, that's...
Also, her being able, her immediately guessing, well, you're Ponce de Leon. And then that's when his response is...
I guess it's Ponce de Leon.
Oh, the Fountain of Youth guy that discovered Florida.
Would you marry me and bear my children?
Such urgency, like the way he says that line feels like he was submerged underwater. He was about to drown.
Yeah.
And then
and now he's coming up.
And it's just, it's so, also, I find this episode just incredibly sweet.
Oh, yeah. For a Halloween, it's sweet and spooky, but mostly sweet, which is interesting. Because it is a Halloween
and,
episode.
Like, but it's just like, but in terms of Halloween, they do not fear being genuine.
Yeah, while the masks are on.
Mm-hmm.
So then, like, we also get a little bit of a pickup of the Sam and Diane thing. Or, like, Frasier has to go to Chicago last minute, and he suggests asking Sam, which is like a big step forward for him.
Awesome.
Right.
Frasier, you're only 4 episodes in.
Yeah.
And you know all that background. What?
Yeah.
You
because he was Diane's therapist.
At an institution because of this guy?
Yeah. But it is like nothing happens, which is a very good progression for the Sam and Diane arc.
Nothing like, physical happens, but their flirting is still like,
oh, yeah, it's all,
10 for 10.
It's all still definitely there. But actually, the fact that they like go to the Boston Pops, nothing happens. They come back. And they even remark like,
by the way, how did you like our first outing with no promise or threat of sexual encounter?
You're not out that door yet.
he spooks her. It's a Halloween episode.
It is, but like he has no grin. There's no nudging aside in his tone or face or anything. And he just says, night's not over yet.
Yeah.
That did not affect me as much as an earlier incident in the episode. But like where like you hear Ted Danson talk on podcasts about how uncomfortable it was coming into the role and how he needed a girl to be like naked in front of him to realize that she was into him. And like, and he talked about like, I needed a girl to be naked and then I would ask her to marry me. Like where it's like, but he plays this role.
And I was like, you should have won an Emmy every year if that is the case. Like, that's crazy how...
That's insane!
...good he is. How natural he is in this role, too.
Yeah, and especially, like, all the flirting with Diane, he does not crack a smile where it's just like, oh my god. Like, there's a point I want to say it's at 11 minutes and 32 seconds where... Diane says, like, oh, well, they agree to go to the Boston Pops. And Diane says, oh, well, like, it's not. And he's like, oh, it's a date. And she says, it's not. Like, imagine, you know, going out with a woman and having no hope of any sexual thing happening. Like, what would you call that? And he looks at her and he goes, a first. And, like, at that point, I wanted to, like, do a, I don't know, two-legged high jump where like...
Like Cliff.
Not, like Cliff. Yeah, or, where like, basically like, I jump and I am straddling Ted Danson's face. like there's no, like he says it so seriously with, I can't even open my eyes.
And it's like,
yeah,
30 years of streaming like, service, like it cuts through all that stuff.
Yes.
The signal's still being broadcast.
And he says this thing where, like, he says it in a way where it's almost like, you know, we both still want to fuck.
Yeah.
And, like, with just, like, this, like, he's like, I'm not convincing you. I'm just stating a fact, which is incredible. And I don't understand how Ted Danson, like, will go on and on about how uncomfortable he was playing Sam Lowe and how he's just like a goof and like insecure.
So then like the date ends, like they're the last ones in the bar. Sam has to unplug the jukebox. Well, they make a plan.
Never assume any kind of, well, one, you never hear music on Cheers because that would disrupt all the scenes, even though I assume a bar would be playing music all the time.
Yeah, it would be playing music and so smoky and no lights. Yeah. And that's why Cheers is the best bar, because it is quiet, bright, and no smoke.
I want to go to that bar where I can hear conversations with people.
Yes, please.
But also it's so sweet that he does go to the jukebox and play music, like, just wants to help his friend and be the best wingman.
So they make the plan to come back, you know, the next night without their masks on.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we get like the cut ahead to the next night. Cliff walks in.
We get that moment though after they agree, because Sam is hanging out at the bar and it's just them, and he's patiently he's taking his chaps off. It's 9 minutes and 51 seconds into the episode where you see that his chaps are off, but you see his full legs because he's propped up on the bar. But then you see this moment of Cliff trying to play it cool.
Yeah.
And Sam being like, come on. Like, and then there's just a joy explosion.
Yeah, I love, like, John Ratzenberger does this really cool, like, she leaves and he's still in his Ponce de Leon costume and he's just, like, swagging around, like, yeah, you know, whatever. And then Sam even, he says, like, you know, if I didn't know any better, I'd say you were, like, you know, really cool dude. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then we get the,
and then
you let it out on three.
Three,
two, one.
Hooray, I got a date! Little boy on Christmas.
Yeah.
So the next night, so November 1st, we're now in November
1st.
Los
Muertos.
So, yeah.
Sam and Diane went to see the Boston Pops on Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah.
Tie that in.
Fireworks. Dia de los Muertos fireworks in Boston. That's how they celebrate.
Yeah. They do.
Cliff's suit. So.
Okay. I love that his hemline is the same as his.
That's all John Ratzenberger, too.
I see it.
He was like, you need to hem the pants so you can see. It's like an old, like, Laurel and Hardy. I think, like, it's one of those old vaudeville, like, physical comedian things of, like, if you can see the more. It's why Michael Jackson always wore, you know,
because
white
of the
socks
old
and, like,
Laurel,
you know,
and Hardy.
Yeah. Well, just because, like, it accentuates, like, the movement of the feet. And
he created the role.
Oh, yeah. He
himself.
Bullshitted his way through the audition and got that role.
Like, because he's like, you have a know-it-all the bar? And, like, to watch this episode specifically and notice the hemline of his pants and realize, like, you know, he wasn't a series regular for the first season. Like, he just was a fucking pioneer and was like, I'm going to create this character. And when
I'm
going to
muscle
him,
my way onto this great show.
Like, and then people are like, yup, because he just knew it. And then, and seeing him in a suit and having those ridiculously hemmed pants was like, this is you. Like, and thinking, like, this episode on, like, a supporting character that is completely focused on him came as a result of that hard work of, like, oiling up the writers.
Yeah, of like spending 2 years really, like, honing this character, you know, bullshitting your way through an audition where you're like, yeah, by the way, and in his head, like, I know I'm not gonna get Norm, but do you have this kind of character? Like
that's,
it's
like,
so great.
That is incredible. And also to know, like, you know, he would never go up, like, he'd never be right for Norm, he'd never be right for Sam or Frasier or anyone. He is just like, that character is John Ratzenberger's wheelhouse.
But I love, he's wearing, like, a three-piece, it's like a gray navy, like, it's like a dark three-piece suit. Looks really nice, fits him well. Like, I like a good dressed-up Cliff. Oh, God, what's my problem? But also, the other thing is when he walks in, the audience responds as if he is a teenage daughter on a TGIF sitcom coming down for prom. Because they all, like, there's wolf whistling, there is applause, like, people are like, ooh, look at Clint.
When,
like,
he's in the suit.
Yeah, when he comes in the suit.
Also, I think this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the only episode where we see him in two outfits that are not his uniform.
Oh, we never see him in the uniform in this episode.
Like, I think that's the
only, that might be, yeah.
Like, that's also really fascinating.
Yeah, wow. It's also just crazy. He has the A plot and the Sam and Diane stuff. It's honestly like a C. Like, it is so minor in this episode. It's like a couple of exchanges. It's all Cliff.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. They, like, sidelined Ted Danson and Shelley Long to be like, well, this is the Cliff episode.
I mean,
obviously.
Like, they still were sprinkled, like, they're so hot for each other. Okay.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, that was maybe 3 minutes of 25 minutes.
Which is crazy. So Cliff shows up and he's, like, playing it cool, but then he tries to show how suave he is by going over and lighting a lady's cigarette at the bar.
He gets
there and just melts. I'm can't do it.
Like, it's like he had a stroke just around his mouth.
So he goes into Sam's office. And then has this freak out where we then get Another thing I love, which is Norm actually admitting that he is Cliff's best friend.
That scene, like, it's not just action. It's like, I'm going to explain the motivation behind my action.
Yeah.
Where, like, I am your friend. And
he says, like, a lot of people have been talking a lot of things about you in this bar, and, you know, as your best friend, I've had to, like, speak up for you. And it's like, because there's a turn that happens in most sitcoms when they go 11 years, when characters get whittled down to, like, a couple of points you just hit hard. And there comes a turn when every joke about Cliff is about him living with his mother, and even Norm kind of distances himself from him.
Yeah, because it's fucking rough to see
early on in season 3 when Norm is, like, full on saying, like, listen, as your best friend, and it, like, means a lot. It's so nice.
Like,
and he still rags on him, obviously, and, like, but it's, like, so
and you
sweet.
See Cliff sitting in Sam's chair, so you really see those white socks. And, like, you just see, like, Norm being a fucking good friend. And then him also saying, like, there's a woman out there who's as weird as you. Like, I give like, I'm going to be so pissed off if you have a shot. And it's played by George Wendt's wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Tinkerbell is George Wendt's wife, who,
like,
also voices Vera
in
all
the Thanksgiving episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Like, there's just something, and also, what a sign of friendship for someone to say, there's this woman who's as weird as he. Like, and I feel like that's just someone who, that's a good friend who understands your weirdness and what you deserve. And there's, like, so much also, like, with Sam defending Cliffy when they all think he's gay, and then, like, him also, like, really supporting him once she leaves the bar. And there's a lot, actually, I'm realizing, like, of the way healthy male friendships work.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's
why I
cite that on a lot of things.
That's, oh, I just love it so much. So Cliff goes back out. He's like, I'm going to wait. 6 hours pass.
He stands.
He's on his
by that Indian
beer.
Statue.
Yeah,
and
he folds his arms just
posed
like it.
Exactly like the Indian statue, like left, right, over. Left arm over right.
So now he's got like a pile of empty beer steins at his feet, a fourth one in his hand. He goes and sits down at the bar. This is fascinating to me. He goes and sits down at the bar, and he tells this story about,
you know what my nickname was in high school?
No, you never told us.
It's because I didn't have one, Coach. I tried to get one started, you know, made it up myself. Courteous Cliff.
Courteous Cliff. As long as you're making it up yourself, couldn't you have done a little better?
I didn't want to arouse suspicion, Nammy.
And the way it is shot, just the first time I noticed it, it's like, I'm on 3 in my third Angry Orchard now, so a little bit.
It's okay, I'm on and all over the place. My words are
so fine. So it's like James Burrows walked in and sat the camera down on the bar, because that shot, it is so low. It's honestly like you are literally like, it's like your head is on the bar and you're looking up at them, kinda. It's deeper into the set than they usually ever shoot. And it's just for that one little monologue. It's 11, and it adds this level of, like, theatricality and intimacy that you don't normally see in any of these shows. These shows normally, like, keep their distance. Even, like, tight shots, you can tell the camera's far away, and it's, like, zoomed in.
Yeah.
Like, it's But this, in this one scene, the camera is, like, physically, it looks like it is literally placed on the bar. It's, like, eye level with the bar, and you're looking kind of up and over at Cliff. You're mostly focusing on Norm, and Cliff is in profile. And it's, like, a very arty shot for this show. It makes me wonder, like, did they do that in front of an audience? Was that a pickup shot later? Also, like, at what point, it speaks to the genius of James Burrows to be, like, this is the, I don't know, 50th episode of this show he's done, and all of a sudden he's like, let's shoot it this way.
Yeah, it's
Why this scene? It's so cool.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there are two episodes on Cheers where they built a set for, like, I guess it would be Downstage, right?
Yeah.
Where they built a wall so they could film it, like, from the perspective of Sam's office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's jarring. It's, you notice it. But this, that was a little more subtle.
Yeah, in this way that just felt intimate. Yeah, and it really does, for that one, like, nickname thing, it does feel like you are crowding around him and hearing him tell a very personal thing, which is why this shit is art. Damn it. It's, I mean, like, it's at this point that in my notes, I just wrote, so human, and underlined it. Because it's just, the way these characters all act and talk to each other and behave around each other is just so intricate, intimate. It's just so cozy and realistic.
And I think of, in terms of the coziness and the familiarity, I think of how Carla is not, she's in a minute of this episode.
Yeah.
But the way she flows in and flows out is perfect.
Yeah.
And it feels like, and especially, like, you know, of course I have memories of my childhood and being part of a family that all lived together. And now I babysit three girls, and it's this flow and intricacy, and basically babysitting three kids is like being at Cheers.
It's like Cheers, yeah. Yeah.
Where you have, obviously, like, these, like, there are routines, you know, like if you put, like, any character from Cheers, you put them in a different situation, you know how they're going to react. And that is when you are enmeshed with a family.
Yeah.
And and the way, like, you, and, like, the way when we get really close to family members that we hate because we're angsty teenagers and we want to set off and push buttons, and we know how to do that. But, you know, like, so does the way everyone interacts on Cheers. Yeah. Like, it is family dynamic. And and Carla sometimes is just like that four-year-old youngest sister who's just a bitch to everyone and, like, wants to, like, is provoking people for the sake of provoking.
And she's bored and needs something to do.
Yeah.
So then there's a call into the bar, and Coach answers it, and he's like, well, there's no Ponce de Leon here. It turns out she's, like, at the phone booth outside and has just been anxious this entire time waiting to come in because she's nervous.
And I think that her being nervous, but that shot of her coming down the stairs.
Yeah.
And you just see her feet. And, like, I don't think when they started the show it was intentional to have, like, because you've, like, throughout the show, you see people's feet going down those stairs, and there's this anticipation.
Yeah.
And almost, like, playing with a fantasy of, like, what's going to happen. And they tapped into that. Yeah. And, like, and that device was used throughout the show in this, like, incredible way where it's like, okay, this is my norm. This is my everyday. This is my life, but seeing a stranger's shins and calves, like,
the world of possibilities.
Yeah. Which is nuts.
So she finally comes in, like, they see each other for the first time. He introduces himself as,
I'm Club Kloofen. I'm Cliff Claven.
I'm here, you share. Sharon the hair. I mean, I'm Sharon O'Hare.
Like, you see her struggle. Like, you never see this character again. And it's so masterful to see her wrestle with, like, you can see her wrestling with insecurity and her identity and her name.
Yeah. Which is so deep, honestly. She's trying to like get her name out. The most basic thing about her.
Yeah.
She's trying to like enunciate it to say who I am.
And there's something beautiful and vulnerable about it.
And as you said, we never see her again. So that's basically the episode. If this was a 2018 show, this would begin what we call a story arc. And you might actually see her again.
Like, I think that's the most disappointing part of this episode is you never see her again.
He does get a recurring love interest, that mail carrier lady who's in one episode, and then she comes back a couple seasons later. But he like never gets a steady girlfriend. Like, he maybe loses his virginity to that girl. Like, that's the other thing is like Cliff also might be a virgin. Because there's that episode where he gets, like, tied to the bed or whatever.
It's interesting because I feel like Frasier was not... He wasn't Sam and Diane. And when Frasier and Diane broke up, after a while, the writers were basic... Like, B.B. Newirth showed up as, like, in an opener scene.
Right, yeah.
And she didn't show up until, I think, a season later... When, like, after we had, like, established Frasier, who he was, not dating Diane. And then the writers were like, basically, let's get Frasier a girlfriend. And they did that. Poor Cliff.
From a writing standpoint, I want to see what Cliff's girlfriend is like, or boyfriend. That would be such a rich goal. Like a Cliff breakup episode.
And the ideal match for Frasier was absolutely Liv. And you got to explore, like, all of their dysfunction, all their psychology of why it worked and why it didn't. And, like, Frasier was free. He was the dumped boyfriend.
Yeah.
And to do that... And really treat the cast as an ensemble worthy of delving into, like, complicated aspects of character.
Are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode? Our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So the ratings for this episode, 19.8 million people watched this
episode. I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Compared it to was, how TVs watched that.
It was number 14 for the week with that many people. So for the entire... it was number 14.
Well, like, Wait, how many million people?
19.8. It was 14th for the week. I miss those days.
bananas. Okay.
For the season, so for the ratings for the season, so it was number 12 overall for the season. It was tied with a show called Hotel.
Yeah, that, like, I should have done research on. What shows were before this?
So the top five shows of this TV season were: number five was Family Ties.
Yeah.
Four was 60 Minutes. Three was The Cosby Show.
Like, 60 Minutes shouldn't even be included, but okay.
Three was Cosby Show. Two was Dallas. And number one was Dynasty. So
people,
this was
like
the 80s.
Epic squalling, like, okay.
This was the 80s when, like, taste was questionable. I mean, like,
that's a very kind way of putting it.
Well, it's like family sitcom. The 80s is a wasteland is too harsh of a term, but the 80s is just, it's family sitcoms a palooza.
I mean, that's why Too Many Cooks exists.
Yeah. It's why the 80s is kind of this big gap in my knowledge, because I don't really care about family sitcoms. I care about workplace and found family ones.
But
in the 80s, you've got like Night Court, Golden Girls, and Cheers. And that is about
it.
And Taxi, but that's like 70s, 80s. So it's wild. On IMDb, 278 users rated this episode an 8.2. Would you go higher, lower, or is that right on the money? I would give this like a 9.2.
Okay.
I would go higher.
So I'm trying to figure out the demographics of people who rate things on IMDb.
Oh, it is, man, it is like...
And how are the rest of the episodes of the season rated?
I wish I should have looked that up.
Okay, so that's concerning, because also I remember when I was binging for the first time, Cheers, I would look at what the ratings were for IMDb to get a sense, and there were not a lot of episodes in the 9 range.
Oh, that's insane. Because most of them are.
Like most of the episodes are 7 to 8 type of range. In that decimal variable.
This is like a 9.2, 9.0. Like, it's such a solid episode.
Like, it's a hard,
sweet, memorable one.
I can't think of an episode of Cheers where it's not.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Like, I wouldn't give... I think even the worst Cheers is probably still a 7 at
the
lowest.
Like, 7.0, worst episode of Cheers.
Yeah, probably.
There are different, it depends what I'm rating it on. I think that the fact that we get to explore a character like Cliff.
Yes, and so minor.
And explore not like his desires, but like also kind of his psyche and what made him who he was. And like, and it's not afraid to explore like, how, like, he's an insecure guy and finds this like point of reference to connect with a human being in a romantic way.
It's so deep.
That's so profound. Like, I want this story for everyone.
Yeah, adapt it into your real life, people.
So delicate and caring.
Oh, nice. So this is like a perfect episode, basically.
I don't have a rating, but it's perfect.
Yes. So the NBC Thursday night lineup that this aired as part of was The Cosby Show, Family Ties, and then Cheers and Night Court, and then Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
So that's a good, like, that's a solid, solid must-see TV lineup. You got two family sitcoms, you got two workplace sitcoms, and then
top
the drama.
It off.
Top it off with Cops.
Yeah.
That's like solid. And then I also wrote down that Bernadette Burkett plays Sharon O'Hare, the Tinkerbell, and she is George Wendt's IRL wife, and they are still married. And she also was the voice of Vera every time we heard Vera.
That makes me so happy. I want to imagine when they were going over lines together.
I mean, George was pretty excited.
Yeah, like, also, like, I love that George gives John Ratzenberger a pep talk about seducing his real life wife. But okay, so music in this episode.
Yeah, there's a song that plays that they dance to that I Shazammed and tried to figure out what it was, and it, like, doesn't really exist.
So I'm assuming you watched the Netflix?
Yes.
Okay. They had to, like, they couldn't license all the music for that. So on Netflix, that is not the song they dance to. But
what do they dance to?
They dance to one of my favorite songs, probably in existence, which is Moon River.
God.
So imagine them dancing to Andy Williams singing Moon River. See, which you never would expect to be on the Cheers jukebox.
Now I am like, I want to see the uncut scene.
So you can go on YouTube for not like when they're first dancing, but the last scene when Sam kind of positions them together.
He who's lines them together by like moving their hands,
which is adorable. And also, you get a full body shot of Ted Danson.
You really
get to become familiar with how long
the length of his life.
His legs are, and it's not an optical illusion. That song is it just fits so much better with like that kind of connection. And you can look it up on YouTube. Just like,
yeah, I'm gonna have to do that.
Yeah, because it's adorable.
Like the song they dance to is just like a generic. I mean, it has lyrics. It's like a song, but like I Shazammed it. It's obviously something that was created by a like rights free music company.
Totally. It's like
probably popped up in a bunch of other things.
Watching them dance to like Moon River. That's solid and so romantic and like. But watching this, I guess, like, the downvote I would have with this episode is that I didn't get to see more of that relationship.
That's the... Because I remember, like, watching this first time, I was like, oh, I can't wait to watch the next episode, and then, nope.
Nope. It's, like, never completely again. Forgotten.
Yeah, I want to know, like, because Cheers also was one of the shows that pioneered the ongoing plotline in sitcoms, so it is so weird that that would not have crossed their mind, especially because it's George Wendt's wife, so they probably did see her
all the time.
And she also voiced Vera, so she was around. So it is so weird that it didn't cross their minds, or I want to know, like, maybe John Ratzenberger was like, no, I want to keep playing Cliff as single. It might have been a choice that, like,
next time I run into him in an airport, because he's just in airports meeting people, I will confront him.
So who had the must-see performance in this episode?
Like, MVP?
Yeah.
Of the show? Because I've thought a lot about this question. Because everyone is playing, like, peak those characters.
Oh, yeah. They all know who they are.
Yeah. Which is like, okay, so you... That was handed off to you. Like, you got that. Like, you can trust the writers. You can trust the environment. And then John Ratzenberger is, like, just so fantastic and on point. But then I think, can he be the MVP if he's the star? Like, when, like, you already know writers are catering to him.
Oh, yeah.
But then they're like, well, who are the people who provide that flavor that without Cheers, like, it wouldn't be a Cheers episode.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I love that the episode focuses so much on Cliff. And he sells it in his physical comedy when she goes to the pool room and he's like, holy God. And, like...
Yeah. Good God.
And his
so good.
Knees buckle. Like, it's like, you were born to play this... But, like, we all of us as viewers know this is your episode. But I want to say that Carla is not featured in this episode. She does not have a plot. She only has one-liners. But those one-liners are so purely Carla.
They're great.
And without them, you'd feel like something was lacking. talking. And there's that point in where, you know, it's the day after.
Yeah.
Where Norm is trying to get things out of Cliff. And then Carla shows up and says, he wants to know if you boinked her, you dink. Yeah. Which one sounds like pure The Good Place dialogue.
Yeah, oh yeah, it totally is. Yeah.
But the, like, there's just something like, you nailed, like, this is where he lives.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that's my MVP.
Nice and surprising. Mine is obviously Cliff. I am predictable.
Because he cares, Joe.
Yeah, because also, yeah, I can't. I think he's probably my must-see performance scenario. must other people see this episode? I think if you haven't seen this episode yet, what are you doing? You've got
to
see it.
It shouldn't be their introduction to the show. Also, no. You need an introduction to the show? What the fuck, man? Like, why is
this
the only show? Cheers?
This is one of the only shows where you could start with just start with episode one and don't skip anything. It's so rare that most shows like start with episode two, just like
go to season two. There's so many, but like
this is like just start.
Just
like, and then you'll hit
and
this
if you
one.
Started from this, you would know everything about every character.
And you also get to see Cliff, quite possibly his high moment, the best moment he has in the entire series, probably. Right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of peaks and valleys, but, like, this is him at, like, he's good, and people like him, and he's doing good. Hey, what's up with that?
I don't know if our listeners can tell, but I've had a significant amount of rosé.
As is the tradition with Cheers.
It has to be.
Yeah. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk to you about Ted Danson's legs?
Oh, my God. Okay, everyone should listen to Aaron Gold's podcast, Don't Mind If I Don't, when we were on that, because around minute 32, I become obsessed with Ted Danson's legs.
Yeah.
not the first time. But like, I'm on Reductress. I've written articles. I'm writing some new ones, which is exciting. Yes. Angela Marie Demanti. And I've been doing meal prep and planning for people interested in vegetarianism. Ooh. And baking. But just look up Someone in a Tree, Angela Demanti, and you'll find all my links.
Thank you so much for coming by.
You're wonderful.
Digitally. Wow. Great. And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV Special Spooky Cheers Edition. Before we go this week, I do have a question I want to just talk about for a second with an answer-shaped string of words. former guest of the show, Brandon Beck, asked on Twitter, oh, and also you should go back and listen to the I Dream of Jeannie episode that he guested on last year. Do you have any sitcom deal breakers? Like, if you try a show and they do something, like a type of joke, a music cue, etc., that makes you immediately go, yeah, no thanks, this isn't for me. Yeah, probably. I will say that usually if it's a family sitcom, I'm going to be a little bit wary just because I don't care for, like, precocious kids and their hijinks. Also, if it is the typical, like, fat husband model wife dynamic, I just haven't checked in on any of those. I don't know. Maybe King of Queens or is Yes Dear isn't that format. It's kind of schlubby dudes. What was the one with Mark Addy? Oh, God. Still Standing. Was that the Jason Alexander one? Anyway, there was a bunch. I don't care for any of those. And also, if it sounds like the audience is aggressively fake, there are a lot of shows, this is definitely true of mostly the 60s, is that the audience, the laugh track is literally a laugh track. It is actually canned laughter, which is why in the 70s with Mary Tyler Moore and Bob Newhart, there was this push towards actually saying this was filmed in front of a live studio audience. Same thing as with Cheers and Friends and Frasier and shows that you can actually feel like the audience is a part of it. It's why that 70s show, I remember being in middle school and being like, that 70s show is weird because the audience laughs at every, like literally everything. And now I realize it's because there was no audience. And also, that's the reason that How I Met Your Mother rings a little bit false with me. I think I would prefer that show without a laugh track. The second sub question of this, the same question for shows you like, is there something a show can do that makes you go, yes, please? Honestly, nowadays, that is cast people that I like in it. That's why I'm enjoying shows like Happy Together in the Neighborhood and The Cool Kids, because I loved New Girl, so I'm going to follow Max Greenfield and Damon Wayans Jr. everywhere. And Cool Kids has Martin Mull and Vicki Lawrence and David Alan Grier and Leslie Jordan, so I'm going to watch those shows. Also, if it is a found family show, I'm going to be a little bit more inclined to watch it. But I think I tend to follow creators. It sounds like I'm talking about comic books. I'm talking about like showrunners. Like, I watched The Good Place because I trusted Mike Schur, even though I don't really have an affinity for Kristen Bell. I do now, though. She's amazing. So if a creator I like goes on to do a show, I will probably be interested in it for that reason. So creators and actors. But yeah, thank you for that question. If anyone else has any more questions about sitcoms, please send them to @MustHaveSeenTV on Twitter or Gmail, MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com. Next week on the show, I will be discussing, I swear I promise, the Andy Griffith Show, The Loaded Goat episode. The Loaded Goat is in season 3. It is episode 18 of the Andy Griffith Show, and you can watch the Andy Griffith Show on Netflix. This is a wild one that I've been holding on to for way too long, and I cannot wait to explode it all over your ears and devices. If you like what you've heard, please, I beg you to rate and review the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @BrettWhite. Read the words that I write @Decider.com. The theme song this week is The Anxiety Tango by Vic Mizzy from the Addams Family soundtrack. Thanks to the Acast. Or just thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to you for listening, and I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.